Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are we doing?
Morning.
Morning, honorable members. It's 9:30, and we're supposed to be starting. Let us start our session. I would like to welcome everybody, all the members of the Portfolio Committee for Public Enterprise, including the invitees, which is the ESCOM group. I hope it's led by the minister, though I don't see the minister, and the deputy minister will be leaving us today. And the CEO, the group CEO, and then we're supposed to be starting now, honorable members, and I declare this meeting open and welcome everybody, yourself and our guests. The meeting today will be getting a briefing by ESCOM on the impact of coal prices, load shedding, cost plus mines, electricity tariffs, escalating costs of on the security of electricity supply and performance of the company. An update on the Kusile employees accommodation saga that we saw on media. We hope to get a proper briefing on that. And then the consideration and adoption of the minutes. That's all we're supposed to be dealing in our meeting today. Without wasting our time, I would like to quickly go with the apologies, and if the secretary have any other, there is a formal one from the deputy minister whom I've noticed that is still here, will be leading a delegation to the select committee. I understand that the dinner will be presenting its report there. Perhaps the deputy minister might leave just before 10 to attend that meeting, which might start at 10. I hope other members are all here as far as the list is concerned. And the honorable members, I would like to get from the ministry to just do introduction so that we give over to ESCOM. Deputy Minister, I think I don't see the minister. I think you are the person who is here. I don't see the apologies. Maybe the people will be giving us that particular apology. Deputy Minister? Okay, we don't seem to have him here, but the minister is trying to connect. I'm trying to check. He's the one that is supposed to be in the meeting to do an overview. But there is a name there of Phumulo Mosoali, and there is only one Phumulo Mosoali, is the Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises. Is there any person who's using his gadget? And I've seen Andile Mosha also here. Okay. No, yeah, no, I think we seem to be having a problem, Chair. Maybe we may consider allowing the ESCOM to do the work. Otherwise, the minister should join us shortly.
Okay.
In the light of that particular technical problem, let's go straight to the ESCOM Group CEO.
Morning, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much again for the opportunity to present to the Portfolio Committee meeting. The Minister has just...
Can I also step you a bit? There is another apology that was formally written. I even responded to of the chairperson of the board of ESCOM. Professor is attending another extremely important session today, I think with the cabinet, if I'm not mistaken. Also, I suspect the minister is in that session. I don't know.
Okay, can you continue?
I've just joined you, Chair. Good morning.
Honorable Chair, the Honorable Minister of Public Enterprises has joined the call. I will defer to him.
Okay. Thank you. I forgot to unmute myself. I was speaking muted. Minister, we were just about to start and we're already giving to the ESCOM Group CEO to present the report because you seem to be having a technical problem. Welcome, Minister. We appreciate you coming in and we would like you to provide us with the introduction. Yeah, as we traditionally do.
Now, thank you, Chair. My apologies. I was, in fact, in a cabinet committee meeting, and I can confirm that Professor Makoba is addressing that meeting right now. So my apologies for joining late, but let me hand over directly to the CEO, Chair, and then we can take any issues that arise thereafter. So thank you very much, and over to the CEO.
Thank you very much, Minister Gordhan, and again, thank you very much for the opportunity, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, to update you on the four matters that the Chair mentioned in the introduction. We are joined today by Dr. Rod Crompton, who is representing the ESCOM Board, so the Board is also represented here today. With your permission, Chair, we would like to commence immediately with the presentation that we have submitted to accompany our briefing document to the Portfolio Committee. Can I please confirm that that is acceptable to you, Chair?
Yes, it's acceptable, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Therefore, from our side, Natasha, can you please start sharing your screen or the relevant ESCOM official, if we can get the presentation up on the screen.
Chair. Chairperson.
I'm I'm seeing another hand of Honorable Sibusiso Kumede, and somebody is also calling Chairperson. Honorable Mawotwe?
No, that's fine. I wanted to alert you that there's a hand that is up. It's been up for some time.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Honorable Mawotwe. Honorable Kumede?
Sir, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, that's fine. My buttons are not working, so they are not indicating whether I'm on or off. So that's what I wanted to indicate to you. I wouldn't know whether I'm on or I'm off. So I'll just take a chance that I'll try and put it off now. In case
okay.
I want to say something, I'll show there, and then we take a try. Thank you very much, Jay. Good morning.
Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Kumede. Let's go back to you, Group CEO. But I just want also to indicate, man, another important apology is that the secretary of this committee is having another pressing family-related problem. He won't be part of this committee today. We are having Cindy is standing on his behalf. Thank you so much. Can you continue, Lucio?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The presentation is up on the screen now. If we can move to the next slide, just to briefly review the topics to confirm. As per the request from the committee secretariat, we intend to cover four topics, Eskom coal contracts, that will be dealt with by Mr. Snell Nagar, who is the acting head of our primary energy division. We will also address electricity tariffs that will be dealt with by Mr. Caleb Kassim, our chief financial officer. And then the two last remaining topics, Madupi and Kusile, as well as the Vulgar residential development, that will be dealt with by Beki Nkumalo, who is our group executive for capital. So without further ado, with your permission, Chair, I want to hand over to Mr. Snell Nagar to take us through the coal contracts. Snell, please.
Thank you, Andre. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, honorable members, and to the Eskom team and all the members that are on this platform. If I can start, basically, what we're showing here is that from an energy perspective, for a similar energy sent out, when comparing total output, this is energy output, historically to the current output, Eskom is producing that output with a more expensive mix of power stations and a more expensive mix of coal contracts. So what you're looking at the graph, the light shaded area is the cost plus mines, the orange shaded area is your fixed price contracts, and your blue shaded area is your short medium term contracts that are generally not tied mines and that need to be transported to the power station. So from around the early 2000s, the utilization of the power stations were increased beyond their original design capacity. And you would have heard you would have probably heard historically the term 97.3. So that resulted, the 97.3 resulted in the power stations burning more than what the associated tide mines could supply. And that had to be supplied from a different source if the tide mines could not be increased. It started resulting in the blue bit of the graph increasing over time. That was one of the factors. The other factor is that from around 2004, as the electricity demand started increasing, the burn at Majuba Power Station and Tutuka Power Station also increased quite a bit, requiring additional coal to be purchased to those stations that could not be supplied from the tide mine. And Majuba Colliery does not have a tide mine, so coal had to be brought in. What we also have is that from around 2006, the return to service stations, which is your Camden, Komati, and Kuratle stations, started coming online, which also does not have tied mines associated with those power stations. So therefore, the bringing online of those power stations resulted in additional coal that was required to be purchased and transported to those stations. From around 2006 as well, which I will show you the details in a slide later, there was also a steady decrease in our cost plus mine production. And you can see that in the lighter shaded area on the top on the graph on the top. And this decline needed to be replaced and supplemented with short, medium-term coal that required transportation as well. So the bottom graph effectively then shows you the cost contribution to the overall cost of Eskom's coal. And when Eskom started buying coal from non-tied mines, this is also, so the compounding effect of that is also reflected in the red line, which is your overall average unit cost increase over time. So the dark blue line represents a delivered cost of coal. And on average, our transportation cost of transporting coal to our power stations is around 30%. So what we have is potentially like a triple whammy effect. As you've got all the power stations coming online that requires additional coal, you've got your cost plus mines that are decreasing, and that production from your cost plus mines that are decreasing need to be replaced with other coal, which we're buying it fully from the market. And that coal needs to be transported. And those are some of the impacts that have resulted in your cost of call it coal increasing over time, which is depicted by the red line. If you go to the next slide, what we're saying is that Eskom basically uses two types of contracts to secure coal. And these two types of contracts vary, you know, there are variations to both of them, but in principle, they are generally two types. You've got your cost plus contracts, and these are generally long-term, tight colliery contracts where the profit of the colliery is determined upfront that the miner will earn. There's a lot more transparency with regards to what happens in the operations of the mining company. Eskom is exposed to the production and the cost risks of the underlying colliery because of the structure of the contract. And therefore, the cost plus contract is almost like, it's like a contract where you have a contract miner. So the owner of the mine is actually, in theory, a contract miner. And the cost plus contract is also a quasi, you can call it quasi-vertically integration, you know, vertically integrated. So it's the next best thing probably to owning a mine. And the important other factor on a cost-plus contract is that the coal resources are completely dedicated to Eskom. So the miner cannot sell this coal to anybody else but Eskom. The other contract that we have is what we call fixed-price contracts. And we have fixed-price contracts for long-term contracts, which are typically your tight mines, and then we use the fixed price contracts for short, medium-term coal contracts as well, or concluding short, medium-term coal supply agreements. Now the fixed price agreements, the base price is fixed, and the price then escalates over time with an escalation basket, which is linked to market factors. So these fixed price contracts give you a more predictable price path, but they also give you less transparency into the mining operations. So the timing of when you negotiate these contracts and the base price of these contracts is very important. But both these contracts have advantages and disadvantages, and both these contracts have served Eskom well over the past. Some have had advantages and disadvantages depending on which cycle you look at or which lens you look at the coal supply portfolio with. If you go to the next slide, what we're showing here is we've got five operating cost plus mines in the Eskom portfolio, and the five operating cost plus mines are owned by three companies. The RITI currently owns the top three contracts that are reflected. For New World Colliery, this New World Colliery, which supplies the Tongo Power Station, is probably the cheapest coal in the Eskom fleet. It is a very low quality coal product and geographically situated in the Free State area, so away from the Witbank coal field. The next contract we have is the New Denmark coal supply agreement, which applies to Tuka Power Station. This particular contract is probably our worst performing cost plus mine. It's a tough mining operation. It's got low mining seam conditions. It's got a combination of a longwall underground mining equipment section as well as continuous miner sections, and the longwall is due to be decommissioned pretty soon. And this is one of those colliers where back in the 80s and 90s when Eskom had quite a bit of additional and excess electricity capacity, a decision was taken back then that 40% of this mine's capacity was closed down. So the contractual, although we're reflecting here is 5.1, the nameplate in the contract, the contractual volume per contract is around 10 million tons. But 40% of that was reduced back in the 80s and 90s. In the next mine we talked about that's reflected on the slide is Creel Colliery, and Creel Colliery supplies Creel Power Station. Historically, this was an extremely highly productive, only tier one type mine. It used to be one of the best mines in the Anglo stable when this was part of the Anglo operations as well. The drop in production that we currently see is due to a historical underinvestment in those particular in that particular colliery by Eskom. The mine after that is Kutala Colliery. Kutala Colliery supplies Kendal Power Station. It is owned by South 32. Kutala Colliery, at this point, the capital cost to recapitalize this mine is a little bit expensive. It's in excess of 10 billion rand. And so therefore we're looking at potentially continuing to operate this particular colliery at the current tempo and until the reserves run out, which is around 2028, 2029. And we're looking for an alternative solution, which we are discussing with the mine, for an alternative solution to supplement the quarry dropping production. Currently, we have another challenge in that the remaining reserves of this particular mine is of a poorer quality. And where there are high quality sections, the high quality sections have a high sulfur content. So therefore, that creates an emissions and atmospheric emissions issue. The low quality sections have a low quality sulfur. So where you can get the performance up from a power station performance, then we have environmental issues and vice versa if we supply them low quality. So the future of this is to look at how we blend a different coal supply together with this supply to be fed to Kendal Power Station. The last cost plus mine on the slide is owned by Exxaro. And it is Matla Colliery, and Matla Colliery supplies Matla Power Station. The current agreement ends in 2023. We are in negotiations with Exxaro to renegotiate and extend this particular contract. The drop in production compared to the contractual volume is largely as a result of the underinvestment in the mine. If we go to the next slide. So what we're saying is that the cost plus mine contract does have some advantages. One of the advantages is that the resource is completely dedicated to Eskom, and the mining company cannot mine this coal and sell to anybody else. There is certainly greater transparency into the mining operations, and the profit is of the colliery or what the miner earned is determined right up front. The disadvantage is that there is a reduced incentive to control cost or optimize cost from the mining company based on the historical contract. And this type of contract does require greater management from ESCO. If I go to the next slide, so what the slide is showing is that historically, the cost-plus mines have produced above their contractual volumes. And this overproduction was either utilized at the station when the station's burn was above its design capacity. So when we moved to the 97.3 principle, this additional production was able to be utilized at those stations. And where there was excess capacity at the station, they were certainly transferred to other stations as well. But as you can see, from around 2006-2007, we started to see a decline in production from all of these colliries, or a majority of these colliries over time. And the major reason for this reduction has been an underinvestment into those colliries. So if you go to the next slide, what we're showing here is that this is an attempt to illustrate that the impact of not investing in a cost-plus mine, which is largely reflected in the first slide that I showed as well. So the structure of a cost-plus mine is that Eskom typically pays for the operating cost of running the mine and the sustaining capital of those colliries. So those colliries are highly fixed cost operations. So when you've got your production that reduces, the costs of those colliries tend to fairly remain the same, which then pushes up your cost of your cost plus mine. But the shortfall coal, the coal that those cost plus mines could not produce, is then needs to be replaced. And we buy that coal from the market, and that coal that we buy from the market needs to be transported to the power station. So you then have a triple whammy effect. So this graph tends to illustrate that if you look at the top graph, if we invest in the cost plus mines for our capital plans, you'd expect the tempo of the cost plus mine production to be around a light blue shaded area. But as you start, if we don't invest in the cost plus mines, you'll get a further decrease in your production of your cost plus mines. And if you then take that impact plus the impact of replacing the coal with prices as assumed at the bottom, then you get an additional 35 billion rand impact. So this is illustrative, but it kind of gives you an impact of what you're dealing with if you don't invest in the cost plus mines. If you go to the next slide. So what we're saying here is that in 2018-2019, and as I've illustrated in the slides before, we have had our cost plus mine production that started to drop from around 2006-2007. Before 2018, Eskom was negotiating with certain suppliers and the terms and conditions for additional coal. And the terms and conditions of that coal was not favorable to Eskom, especially the pricing of what they were offering. We also, before 2018, in this decrease in cost of mine, started seeing our stockpiles starting to reduce, our average stockpiles across the fleet. We then also, in around, around the 2018 period, the Genta group of companies were placed under business rescue, and that had an impact. It took away about 8.5 million tons of supply out of the call it supply volume base of Eskom's coal supply. There was also at that stage, very poor responses to Eskom's coal requests or requirements that were placed in the market. So around 2018, Eskom initiated an emergency procurement process, which was undertaken. And under that emergency procurement process, there were a number of additional coal contracts that were concluded, and the majority of them were fully under 2 years, 2 years of tenure. So this kind of gives a background as to why we went into a procurement process of buying coal around the 2018-2019 period, why there was additional coal that was required. Now, if you go to the next slide, what the slide IPEX is Eskom did an internal bottom-up analysis of all of its fixed-price suppliers. And this, I must stress, this is an internal analysis. This analysis was based on what we thought of the was the cost of the operations and not necessarily the actual cost of the operations. And the red line on this graph reflects the actual prices concluded for these various contracts. And what this analysis reflected is that there were 7 coal suppliers that we thought potentially were, you know, were making sort of excessive profits on us compared to their underlying cost structures. It is for this reason that we then initiated a program to try and negotiate those 7 suppliers and see if we could bring their coal prices down. If you go to the next slide, the next slide then summarizes that we were number one unsuccessful in renegotiating the coal contracts, the 7 coal contracts that I referred to. And the major reason for us being unsuccessful is that some of the suppliers looked at our coal contracts on a portfolio basis. So they basically said, if you want a discount or a cheaper or a revision of our coal price of this contract downwards, we want an increase on your very cheap contract on the other side. And when Eskom did the numbers, the net-net of it is that it was more expensive to increase our cheaper contract than to reduce this price than to remain with this current coal cost. The other factors that played into the negotiation was that the suppliers wanted increased volumes. So they were willing to drop their price by a certain percentage, but they wanted an increase in the volume offtake in order to achieve that. And when we did the numbers, the net-net of it was also that it was not beneficial to do that. So another factor that impacted all the increase in volume is that we have had a reduced demand as a result of the economy and the impact of COVID. So that also affected Eskom's overall coal requirements post that period. So therefore, Eskom was unsuccessful in renegotiating those 7 contracts to achieve a price reduction. But Eskom is implementing its long-term strategy, which gives preference to long-term coal contracts, to negotiating long-term coal contracts via conveyor belt as a transport option. Thank you, Chair. I think that's the coal perspective that I want to present today.
Honourable Chair, if I may, subject to your guidance, we can either conclude the entire presentation or we can pause after every topic and take questions and answers depending on your preference.
I will suggest that you do all the presentation and then, because members are taking notes of each and every presentation you are making, just finish all presentation and then we'll go for the session of engagement.
Thank you, Chair. Then I will now hand over, again with your permission, to Mr. Caleb Kassim, our Chief Financial Officer, to deal with electricity tariffs. Caleb, please.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thanks for the opportunity. Why does Eskom need a price increase? And substantially, one of the key drivers to that is we have been reliant on government support in terms of the equity support we've received during last year, of which I remind members it was 49 billion rand. And in this financial year ending in March, now at the end of next month, it's another 56 billion rand, of which Eskom has received to date from government 49 billion rand, Honourable Chairperson. And I mean, simple terms, this equates to support of 1 billion rand per week, which is definitely unsustainable. There are many other priorities that government needs to deal with other than supporting Eskom. In terms of closing this gap, there needs to be a journey towards getting to cost-reflective prices based on efficient costs. It's in line with the Electricity Regulation Act, and it's important that with government and with the regulator, we do then agree on a path towards cost reflectivity to reduce the burden on the fiscus. At the end of the day, it's also important, honourable members, to protect vulnerable sectors, and in particular, when it gets to poor residential consumers, there's avenues like free basic electricity, as well as subsidies. But this is all in line with government policy, which then the regulator implements. Important to note that the Department of Minerals, Resources and Energy has approved short-term as well as long-term negotiated pricing agreements, and effectively those sectors that are impacted will, through their respective licensees, it could be Eskom, it could be municipalities, they would apply, which would then be forwarded to the regulator to make an assessment on whether those particular customers qualify. There are various criteria, including financial criteria, that will be assessed. As I said, it's important to close this gap so then we can reduce the burden on the fiscus. If we move on then to the next slide, just to indicate that over a period of since 2006 to 2020, Eskom has calculated that the annual shortfall in the revenue we applied for and what was awarded adds up to about 370 billion rand over time. And we could see that during this time, Eskom has increased its debt on its balance sheet. As you will recall, members, we are were sitting at 480 billion at the end of March 2020. I think what is also important on this slide is the third bullet in the block, that at the end of the day, our debt is on average has about a 10-year maturity period, whereas through the regulatory mechanism, we are allowed to recover this over the life of the assets. And obviously on the generation assets, that's over a longer period, around 50 years and a bit shorter for distribution and transmission assets. It's also important to highlight that the high cost of raising debt based on our financial situation does increase our interest bill and makes the debt service commitments quite difficult to achieve, and the fees and the support that we do get from National Treasury. On average, going forward, our interest bill will be around 30 billion per annum, and our capital repayments around that similar level of 30 billion rand per annum, requiring 60 billion rand just to service debt going forward. In this financial year, the capital repayments and interest, especially the capital repayments, was much higher. We had to service in the region of 94 billion rand for the period ended March 2021. And that is why the need for that support of the 56 billion from government. Members, if I move on to the next slide, just to indicate that where Eskom's price is in terms of US cents per kilowatt, we were sitting at an average of 7 cents per kilowatt, at it using an exchange rate of around 15 rand to the dollar. And what we do show in this graphic is that obviously we understand that some municipal customers have additional markups, and at residential level it's much higher than the average Eskom tariff of 7 US cents. That sits more around 9 cents US cents per kilowatt hour. And we believe that even once we achieve a cost-reflective tariff, around 13 US cents per kilowatt, you will see that Eskom will still be quite competitive in terms of the other countries that are reflected on this graph. So if I move on to the next slide, and with the regulator's decision, obviously this slide is now outdated. The regulator yesterday made a decision which then takes the average tariff for the next financial year, FY22, starting in April, to approximately 15%. And just to orientate the members of what has been awarded in yesterday's decision, in that first block, the NERSA reviewed decision that 1.3 billion Eskom is allowed to recover that from April, as well as the 4.7 billion rand in the second row. And then the court decision in terms of the execution order, the judge then granted 10 billion of the 69 billion to also be recovered starting in April. Honorable members, the other two items on the graph, the RCA for 2018, we're still waiting for a court hearing on that. And Eskom submitted its RCA for FY2020 in December last year. NERSA will still go through its process to adjudicate on that. The one item, members, that is missing from here, there was an RCA of 13 billion rand that related to FY19, and NERSA has decided to also phase that in over a two-year period. So what then happens is Eskom will recover some 6.5 billion rand worth of that starting in April. So that 6.5 billion coupled with the 1.3, the 4.7, and the 10 billion which I mentioned, then gives you that overall price of the regulator's announcement yesterday. If we move on to the next slide, thank you. This just indicates that if we, on the right-hand side, if we look at industrial prices across various countries, that Eskom's industrial tariffs are at the lower end of this graph and very competitive. And if we just express that in terms of US cents per kilowatt hour, you can see that obviously with interest rates and US PPI and the exchange rate, the industrial price from 2012 to 2020 still remains at around 6.8 cents to 6.9 cents per US dollar per kilowatt hour. And there are obviously mechanisms that through policy decisions that will need to be deliberated to protect the vulnerable sectors, as I mentioned. And like the president has mentioned in the SONA, they will be discussing the cap around self-generation, the negotiated pricing agreements I spoke about, and there's also, we believe, potential, obviously subject to either what DMRE and what National Treasury can afford to maybe look at free basic electricity levels, and also we need to understand the impact of subsidies and cross-subsidies. If I move on to the next slide, thank you. I touched on some of this, so I don't want to repeat it, but yeah, it's just important that there are mechanisms to protect vulnerable sectors and residential consumers. With regard to Eskom's tariffs, just on the last bullet, we know that our lifeline tariffs of home light, those two blocks through the NERSA's decisions are used to limit the increase that then is passed on to those category of consumers. Thank you for that. And if I conclude, I think the most important issue is the user pay principle, which is supported by the President, Minister of Finance, and government. I spoke about the average tariff. It is important to recognize that yesterday's decision will obviously, as we migrate to that cost-reflective path, it will then allow us to reduce our reliance on government and the equity support going forward. IOP has indicated that the gap to cost-reflective and competitive levels and where Eskom's price is in the region of at least 25%, depending on various assumptions. At the end of the day, we know that it's not only the price of electricity that affects economic growth. There are many other factors like labor costs, logistics, etc. We would also like to make sure that Eskom can be sustainable on its own strength, its own balance sheet going forward. Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Thank you, Caleb, for that presentation. If I may now invite Mr. Baking Kumalo, who is in charge of our group capital portfolio, to address us on the following two topics, Madupi, Kusile, and Bulga. Becky, please.
Okay, thank you very much, Andre. Good morning, Chairperson and commenting. Chairperson, I will take you through first the bill program, which is mainly focusing on Madupi and Kusile in terms of where we are with the bill program. Chairperson, since we started with these two mega projects, we have now committed since 2015, commissioned 7,000 megawatts onto the national grid. And then extension of the whole build program since 2005, we have committed commissioned 13,137 megawatts to the national grid. I think the last unit to go commercial operation was at Kusile Unit 2, which was last year in October. So I share the rest of the units on these two major projects, the last unit at Madupi. To go to the far right on this graph, Chair, you notice that Unit 1 is planned for this for the next financial year by July this year. So we are on course to put that to last unit that we took into financial into commercial operation by the beginning of this next financial year. And then the third unit that we see, Chairperson and the members, we are also planning to put it as part of this year's financial year into commercial operation. That is Kusile Unit 3. That is going to be the third unit at Kusile. That is going to go into commercial operation by end of next month. So we are busy with the final test of the national grid acceptance for this both these two units, one at Kusile and the one at Madupi. So far, everything is still on program, Chair. And then the rest of the units, then at Kusile, they will be left with the three units, which we will be continuing with them for the rest of the build program up to the financial year 25. But we are trying to expedite, Chair. I need to say that we were a bit disturbed by the COVID pandemic since last year, as we had to stop the work on the preceding unit, but we have resumed now. We are still committed to finish within this latest board approved timelines for this board build program. Thank you, Chair. I move on to the next slide. Chair, I think among the things that has created problems onto these two mega project was the defects that were picked up in both. Primarily, they were picked up first at Madupi, and then also since because they are the similar units, we have then decided to deal with these major defects on both of these two stations, also including the the Ngula Palm Storage in the Drakensberg. So the Ngula Palm Storage Chair, I'm pleased to notify the committee that we have managed now to clear the defects of the Ngula Palm Storage, so the units are capable of doing a full load. Then at Medupi and Busile, we have agreed with the contractors on 6 defects that need to be corrected. Without going through all of them, but the key one is also on the filter plant. The filter plant is the plant that deals with the removal of the dust that goes into the atmosphere, and then the milling plant that is responsible for the cold grinding that we burn into the boiler, and then the ash removal system, and then the rest of the other on the control side as well. So those are the main defects that we have agreed with the contractor that they need to be addressed to, as per the contracts. So we are making progress, Chair, on those ones. We started with the Medupi Unit 3 last year in April, and then that unit has since returned. It's been running fairly well since that time. We are also doing the on-load optimization test and performance verification test together with the contractor. So far we have managed to get that unit to run into full load for greater part of the this year, and is currently performing above 80% in terms of availability as we speak even now. So Chair, I think one of the issues now that we are also engaged with the suppliers on is that because there was an agreement to fast track the program to say we will go 50-50 on the addressing these major defects on these two plants. So we have done now at Medupi, we finished with the 5 units. The last unit is going to be starting now in terms of the outage. And then also once we are on that process now, we are also starting the dispute arbitration within the supplier. But the supplier has accepted most of the defects that are coming through. Those that are in dispute, then we have agreed that we will follow the formal contractual vote on that, Chair. We move on to the next slide. I think, Chair, this just gives an update in terms of where we are now with the corrections of these major defects on this plant. So we noticed that I said Medupi Unit 3 was the first unit. We have done Medupi 6 in June last year. And then Medupi Unit 1 was done in September. And then in October we did Unit 4. We just finished Medupi Unit 2 now. It just went back into operation now as we speak. That unit is also now performing at full capacity. So the last unit to be done at Medupi now is Unit 5. That is the unit that we will be starting with in the beginning of this next financial year. Then we would have dealt with all the major defects at Medupi, and then we're also now also monitoring the performance of the unit to and correct wherever we need to correct. And then from the auxiliary side, the units that are still under construction, which is mainly 4, 5 and 6, those ones will come into our operations already being modified with all these lessons from Medupi. And then the other 3 units, which is 1, 2 and 3, because those units are already running now, although Unit 3 is still not commercial, but it is running, supporting the national grid, so we will also plan the outage for it as per that date next year when we are doing the guarantee inspection on that unit. So by the end of this financial year, 5 units at Medupi would have been done, and then only 1 left for corrections of the defects, which will be done in May. And then Busile will then follow starting in June with Unit 1 as it goes to its normal outages, because what we have done as well to minimize the impact on the national grid, we try to tie in these outages with the normal unit maintenance cycle as well. We move on to the next slide. So there was an issue as well that we needed just to reflect on the cost overrun. I think what is key that I need to mention here, that amid all the issues we started with Medupi without all the plans, and then we also saw the huge cost overrun in the initial years. But since the board approved budget in 2015, those numbers we have not changed up to now, and these are the numbers that we are still committing to finish this project on. We do be at 145 billion, with the current spend at 120, and then Busile at 161, and then current spend at 140. So that is the plan, Chair, that we're still committing to board as well, and to say these are the numbers now, because we understand now all the scopes that we have to deal with. So we're still having the risk. We have seen a huge increase on the number of our suppliers that are declaring a hardship and some bankruptcies. Those are the issues that we still need to deal with. But from what the board approved in 2015, that's what we are committing to finish this project on, with a total of 306 billion for both stations, currently at 260. Thank you, Chair. Let's move on to the next slide. In the next slide, the Chair talked to the information that was requested regarding the Velka flat. I move on to the next one. Yeah, the Velka flat, Chair, is one of the stories that is a threat for us as ESCOM. But yeah, I will take the committee through it. But this Velka flat was started in 2012, was supposed to be finished by end of 2013. The project was approved for 260 million. And then with all the issues that was picked up, that the team that was busy with picked up, and then the current spend year to date is 632 million. On that project, with an additional 207 million that was due for the common infrastructure. The total spend on this project is 840 from the initial 260 million that was approved. Chair, I think given the extent and the problems that we experienced with the contractor that was appointed to do this back in 2017, August, the board then approved that the contract with the supplier be terminated, and it was fully terminated end of August. And then the following year in 2019, seeing the progress that was being made by the projects on the plant itself and the initial intention of this flat, the strategy then was approved by ESCO that this project needs to be stopped, and then it was seen that the cost that is going into it and the initial intended benefit was not going to be realized. And then I think also it's prudent to mention that the whole of this 840 has been declared as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because then the initial intent of the project was not met. I move on to the next slide. So this just shows the different blocks of this Velka flat. It's just outside the silo between Malaseni and the power station itself. Okay, let's move on to the next one. So this one just talked to the summary of this cost overrun in this project in terms of how it was incurred. I think the initial increase was because of the labor agreement. There was a lot of strikes that was happening here. Then there was an agreement that was then reached in terms of settlement with labor in terms of what needed to be the payment, which was not part of the initial project, and then that increased the cost to 264, and then it was and then there was also subsequent legal matters that we experienced on this project, and then there were design issues as well with the contractor that was put to design, and then there were limitations on their designs that also resulted into the cost escalation up to 388. And then also there was then termination cost as well on these projects, which then resulted into when the project was stopped by the ESCOM in 2019, the spend was standing at 632 plus that 207 of that surrounding or supporting infrastructure for the flats, which is the electricity upgrade, the sewer systems, and all that utilities that support the project. Okay, if I move on to the next slide. There was investigation that was initiated after the stopping of this project to understand what exactly has happened. And then there was a external investigation, a company that did an investigation, and then which also declared this part of this this flat is also a wasteful, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then following that as well, the terms of the consequence management was initiated, and the general manager who was responsible for this project was then subjected to internal disciplinary process, and then he was subsequently then dismissed in January of last year. And then there are some employees who were also mentioned in the report. We are currently finalizing the disciplinary process of the chair. Then in terms of the recoveries and all of those things, this matter is also by our legal team. It will be reported to the SIU as part of the SIU investigation as well, and then the criminal proceedings will follow suit after that process as well, should they be determined, Chair. I think, Chair, that is the last slide in terms of the summary for the two areas that I needed to touch on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, and also to the ESCOM presenters for sharing the slides. Honourable Chair, I will now hand back to you to facilitate the questions that members might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Group CEO. Honourable members, I think that's the report in front of us, presentation. And I think now is the time to engage the report. I will just follow the normal procedure. I don't need hands. And for now, I will just go through all the list of honorable members on the list. If a member is not having anything to say, he will just say when I come to his name. I'll start with you, Honourable Mkwanazi.
Mkwanazi, Chair. Not Mkwanazi.
Yes, yes. No, Mkwanazi. Right,
thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Allow me not to open the video. I'm running at a reserve battery, Chair, because I don't have an electricity in my area. So it's one of the problems. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to all the honourable members, Minister, Deputy Minister, the DPE team, and the ESCOM team. Chairperson, allow me to first acknowledge the report and appreciate the report as detailed as it is, but also appreciate the work that is done thus far. As much as we are in the early ages of the correction, but we must appreciate the work well done by the department, the ESCOM, and the ministry. Honourable Chairperson, please allow me to pose a few questions. My first question is, Can the minister elaborate on the work that has been happening on the coal quality and the coal contracts that has been looked at? And if he can, talk to us on the issue of the time frame, because in the report they talked about the end of September 2021, and if that can also assist in the historical poor maintenance of its Eskom generation fleet and poor coal quality. Chairperson, if maybe the minister can also elaborate and empower me on that, if those issues have been addressed, how can it will have an impact, especially on the load shedding? Because I think we really need to deal with the issue of load shedding and aggressively. Because it's really inconveniencing and it's really have a very negative impact on the economy and the economic development. Secondly, Che, on the new build that is Medupi and Kusile, Chairperson, I will want to make a proposal to the portfolio committee to say, can't we have time and have a space as the portfolio committee to have an oversight visit today, just to check on the effective correction that has been reported and the work that has been done around that area. I think after that oversight, I think a person will be able to take the matter forward. That would be my proposal, Chairperson, to the Portfolio Committee. Thirdly, Chair, on the electricity tariff, if we can be given a progress on the work that has been done by the Ministerial Task Team on the issue of municipal debt and on engaging those municipalities who are in areas. On that issue, again, Chairperson, on the electricity tariff, on the last slide of the presentation, on the conclusion slide, can maybe the CEO take me through bullet 8 and 9 that talks about IPPs, and can I get more clarification and on that, and what is it that will assist in the effectiveness of producing and assisting energy and Eskom going forward. Lastly, Chair, for me is the issue of the audit outcomes, especially on the wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. What is the plan of Eskom in addressing that? I'm noting, Chairperson, the progress on the Kusile accommodation that started in 2015. But, Chair, 2012 versus 2021, I think it has taken too long. I think we need to note that. But also, if we can have a time frame or the plan to conclude the consequence management, especially on the issue of money recoveries, because I think we need to act on that. And on that Kusile accommodation, if we can be taken through to say what is the plan going forward about those accommodation, because I don't think we can invest so much money as government and leave that a property lying there not being used. What is the plan of Eskom in making sure that accommodation are being used going forward? Thank you, Chair. That will be all from myself. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkwanazi. Honorable Kacharya.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in the conclusion paragraph of the research document that was given to committee members, it states, power supply remains unreliable and unpredictable. And I say you can add increasingly unaffordable. And that Eskom is a long way, it says, to being a successful business entity. The question is, therefore, how do we get there to being a successful business entity, and is it possible? And while we appreciate discrete reports on the various interventions, the fact is, unassailably, that Eskom's model is broken. It borrows money. It charges consumers for electricity and uses the difference in finance costs and consumer income to pay for operational costs, new build and fixes, and in the past even paid dividends, although that will never happen. And that includes the expenditure on reliability maintenance, which is important, very important. But now the debt is so big that the model can no longer work. And while rationalizing coal contracts and identifying discrete instances of corruption and more is all very good, it is nowhere near addressing the elephant in the room, which is debt and finances. So if, as stated in slide 13 of the presentation, that further price increases are required to limit the burden on the fiscus, we need to understand, and please note these following five questions and provide answers to them now or later if the information is not to hand, and I will send these questions through to the Secretary to ensure that they are followed up on. One, what is the finance cost? What are the finance costs of the debt, existing, proposed, on balance sheet, off balance sheet, and covering existing and proposed maintenance and new build fixes on a time frame? Two, what exact level of proposed tariff increases are needed to limit the burden on the fiscus and provide the required fill-up in terms of revenue? Three, what is the quantum of the gap between tariff increases and financing costs that will need to be filled by the fiscus? Is this sustainable, number four, and if so, how? And five, if not, what are the alternatives? While Eskom focuses on debt reduction of 200 billion, and we need details on that, please, and seeks to balance the positives and negatives for Eskom in terms of IPPs against the interests of Eskom's needs and the nation's needs, which should be in sync, not separate, I'd like answers on these. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kashalia. Honorable Maote.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The presentation was long, and we had to grasp it. A lot of information. So my questions will be equal to the part. I'm sure you'll be patient with me, Chairperson. Chair, if you look at the Eskom contracts that are running for 40 years, starting with the one that started in 1979, which is the grill one, is coming to an end. And I heard the presenter saying they are going to extend that contract. Its duration is 41 years and 5. I don't know whether it's 5 months or it's half a year. But nonetheless, this is its 41st year, meaning it's coming to an end soon. So what plans does Eskom have in place to then make sure that we don't end up losing the coal that's coming from here, which will definitely affect the Krill power station? And the presenter also spoke about underinvestment in this cost plus mine, which causes then the shortage of coal and all that. Now, you remember that these mines are private and they are running these mines with the lifespan of the mine itself in mind. So if the coal in that area is meant to last for 40 years and the mine is on its 35th year, common sense tells you that you will not invest much, because then you are investing on something that is dying anyway. So Eskom should have seen this coming, because you can't be in a partnership with someone for 40 years and then you don't know their plans. You don't know how much coal they have that they can supply with you. It should not be a surprise. And they should have known that there's going to be an underinvestment. It's a concession. Concession that's got an end date. And it does not make any financial sense to anyone to invest in your last few years of existence. So this should not be a surprise. And I had a presenter saying they plan to invest 15 billion rand capital in the cost plus mine. Have they done the necessary homework? Have they assessed this mine? And what stake will they have? When I say they, I mean Eskom. What stake will Eskom have in this cost plus mine after spending this 15 billion taxpayers' money? Because I don't think you spend this money and still have a supplier, a service provider kind of relationship. There must be some sort of a solid relationship, which is Eskom should be owning a stake in this mine since they're going to be investing this much. And then the presenter said that in October 2018, the board signed a long-term coal strategy. But surprisingly, 2 months later, which is December, the stock levels went deteriorated badly to the level that the holding stock was less than 20 days in 10 power stations. Now, what does it say about that long-term strategy that the board has signed? Does it mean that it's not helping? And or was it almost like a move then to push Glencore? Because the presenter says just 2 lines later that they were then forced to buy coal from Glencore at high prices. So what's the strategy of the board to deliberately squeeze in Glencore with high prices by sabotaging the entity, by signing that long-term strategy, which did not yield any result except to have the low level going even much lower, which then necessitated Eskom to go into emergency procurement, which meant that Glencore is now selling at high prices. I'm done with coal contracts. I'm going to move now quickly on to the electricity tariffs. And I've been asking this question. Can we get a list of top 20 companies or corporations that are owing Eskom? Because every time we hear is that consumers will pay for the shortages, meaning Eskom can switch off my light at my household. But I'm not being told about the corporations that are owing Eskom. We all know about Soweto residents not paying Eskom. But how come we don't get to know who are the corporations, top 20 corporations or companies that are owing Eskom? Can we get that list as a matter of urgency? And any discussion that suggests that there must be an increase in tariffs, it will be met with a rejection from the EFF. We are not going to agree to increase the tariffs purely because we have been bullied by the mines. And maybe then this necessitates me to ask a question. If the existence of Eskom providing electricity is dependent on coal, which is clear, it's apparent, the fact that we are having 40 years contract, a contract that was entered into even before I was born, and is still running till today, then it means that Eskom needs coal. Now the question is, and I'm sending this to the minister, isn't it time that SOE, minister, you establish an SOE, can be similar to Alesco, that will run a coal mine, that will supply coal at a reasonable price to Eskom, instead of depending on this coal mines that at some point they even connive amongst themselves to hide the prices of coal. And we find ourselves in a desperate situation like now. This mine, the contracts are coming to an end. The next one that is coming to an end is the one of 1989. So 1983, which is left with 3 years, and then followed by 1989. I can tell you now for free, they will not invest any capital on the mine. That will mean that those assets will then live beyond the lifespan of this mine. Now, moving on to Kusile. You spoke about the availability and reliability, which has increased gradually, but they're not telling us what is the target. What is your reliability target? And what is your availability target? And where are you sitting right now? And maybe also to take it back to the Eskom coal contract. Are you not managing this coal contract through the same reliability and availability on those mines, coal contracts that defined the mines? If yes, then how come we are still being told about the quality of the coal, and how come we are still being told about the stock levels and all that? It means the reliability and availability performance measures are not being put in place or are not being managed properly. You spoke about the Midupi and Kusile units, 5 units, Midupi done, 1 left, 1. But when you look at the cost, to me, where I'm sitting, it suggests that very soon we are going to run into shortage of funds, especially for Kusile. When I look at the expenditure to date versus the, when I say expenditure, I mean financial expenditure to date versus what is on the ground, and versus the money that is already, that is left from that project, it tells me that very soon you might run short of funds. Now, can you guarantee that we will not be seized with a submission that seeks to ask for additional funding for Medusi and Kusile? I'm happy that the cost has not increased since 2015. We have not increased the budget, sorry. So can you safely say, with the work that is done and what is left, together with the money that is left, you will be able to finish this contract without asking for additional funds. On the residential development, for me, this project, obviously they failed, we all agree, but why is it now an issue in 2020? And why I'm saying this project was started in 2012, and it was then cancelled sometime in 2017, and we are only talking about the fruitless and useless expenditure in the year 2020-2021. Why is that? And why did Eskom now in 2019, after the contract was long cancelled, even knowing very well that that project had irregular expenditure, had fraud, had all those irregularities that you are mentioning, corruption and financial irregularities, why did we go and appoint a private company to investigate that Bowman Gelifilen Akenis? Why did we contract them to investigate instead of taking the matter directly to the SIU? Because now they've investigated and they've come with a recommendation or the outcome, and only now then you take it to SIU. Why didn't we use government entities that are already in existence to avoid to spend more money? And how much have we paid this Bowman company that was investigating this residential development? How much was paid? What was the contract and how much was paid? And why did we see the need to outsource this to them when we could have gone straight to SIU? Because we have the report. The fact that the board cancelled the contract, it was because of various reasons that were forwarded to them, of which fraud should have been part of it, corruption should have been ordinarily part of it, and financial irregularities. So why did we need to then still contract this one? And how far is the SIU with the investigation of this residential development? And that will be it for now, Chair. I'll pass for now.
Thank you, Honorable Mawatwe. Honorable Piri.
Thanks, Chair. And allow me to just show my face a bit then later. And I must switch it off. I'm afraid of the next work. Chair, I don't have much, but allow me to join to all colleagues, members of the portfolio and the ministry in the platform, and also a delegation from ESCOM. Mine will be, Chair, let me acknowledge and accept, at the same time appreciating the presentation that was well detailed, but you know, I'm feeling to have a hope to ESCOM the way it's going, as the last part of dealing with the mismanagement of money in Kusile in particular, that we are showing, or the management that is currently in, it's showing being responsible and trying to manage things correctly. Let me applaud them in managing that case. And but at the same time, you in one of their reports, just to tell us the manager or the person responsible has been terminated the contract. My question will be on that case, Chair, is that how do we have any plans in place to recover the mismanaged money or finances? Because we need that money. I think it's high time anything that is done that is in contradiction with the law of what we've been appointed for, we need to repay back the money, every single cent. Do they have all cases or management or employees, even the contracts that were paid illegally? Can they give us the detailed report of what is happening within ESCOM and its entities, be it Kusile, Medupi, and others, where they got a mismanagement of funds and the plans to recover the money? Because we really need that those monies as much as yesterday. Chair, let me go again and ask in terms of the Dubai unit. We have been reported that there are three incidents. What technical issues are relating to the Dura unit incident? That is my question to the presenter, and also maybe to the ministry. I won't preamble, but I'll go straight to my questions. And the third one is how is ESCOM addressing the findings and concerns made by the rating agencies in relation to the rating that they got? So, Chair, allow me to pause there if there's a need, and when you still have time, we'll then come back. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, I won't promise with the rate we are moving and looking at the time. There is a debate of the SONA at 2. Therefore, I'm not trying to say the members must not ask, but we must shoot everything so that we will be in a position to finish in time to allow people to prepare themselves for their next session. Honorable Buthelezi. We seem not to have Honorable Buthelezi. Honorable Kwangwa, did you come back? Honorable Kwangwa? Honorable Kwangwa didn't come back. Honorable Clark?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have several questions, and if they can't be answered today, I will submit them in writing. Firstly, what are the implications of the NERSA decision on the consumer? As well as the sustainability in terms of reticulation regarding municipalities, considering that their credit control has dropped to around 65% in bigger metros and many municipalities are not honouring their debt with ESCOM, The burden and risk municipalities impose on the grid, and several issues relate to this. They have massive illegal connections and cable theft. Municipalities do not have the capability to spend their capital budget to ensure that infrastructure is upgraded. And how does this affect Eskom in the long term? Next one. What is Eskom doing about the 33 environmental legal contravention incidents, with the 91% being water-related incidents? Where did these contraventions occur, and what was the sum of fines imposed on Eskom, and was there any legal cost relating to these contraventions? If I could just have clarity, why were the long-term contracts of IPP that Eskom entered into more expensive than the new IPP generation offers? The report speaks of writing off $4 billion as a result of overpayments to a number of contractors involved at Kusile Power Station. Can this please be clarified as to how this happened and how this would be mitigated in the future? And contractors that default on their obligations, are they blacklisted? Then, what plan has been put in place within Eskom in order to enhance critical skills? How would Eskom ensure that careers are attractive in terms of scarce skills like engineers? And how would we bring back engineers into the fold, back into the organization? Maybe looking at establishing a fraternity of engineers where Eskom could tap into. And then in terms of the Wilford development, you know, it's taken 9 years for this report to actually be exposed, and 5 years during the contract to be to put a stop to this contract. And you know, I just find this whole issue unbelievable. I mean, this is a clear indication of a looting opportunity. So firstly, I would like to know, did this project go out onto tender and were there competitive bids? What were the who were the companies that were shortlisted in terms of this contract? How many other contracts has Lavera been given by the DPE, and what are the status of those contracts? I also would like to know if following processes in terms of building laws was followed. Were there proper approved plans submitted to the local authorities and approved? Were there building inspections during the course of the project and final compliances done? Has Lavera been investigated, and are they being blacklisted for future contracts? And did the NHBRC also inspect this project and give certificates to the relevance? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Clark. Can we get Honourable Dlamini? Honourable Dlamini? We seem not to have Honourable Dlamini here. Honourable Kumede?
Honourable,
yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to everyone who is on the platform. And let me join others as well, and thank you very much for the presentation. Chair, I don't know, we seem to have very few documents, but it looks as if we've got too many questions. I want to cut down some, apart from the fact that they were not covered, but others were as well covered. Chair, let me start with the issue of accommodation. gain and we recover money. We keep on talking and the money is being used. By the time we try to recover the money would have gone. But anyway, let me ask the relevant questions, Jim. You know, I'm interested to know who could have initiated the project that I'm talking now, the accommodation at Kusile. Who could have initiated? Were potential tenants consulted? I'm talking about here the study that could have done to see if there is a need or no need. You read the contents of this, no one is willing to stay there, regardless of the facts that the buildings are there, but no one wants to stay there. I don't know what types of impairments are there, but it looks as if no normal person can occupy those buildings or flats. I'm worried that the feasibility was not done, and who could have appointed the contractor? Who accepted? Because the idea may not only come with Kumede, but at the end of the day, it goes to the board, and the board understand that the board suspended the building, the construction. But was it not reported initially? Why coming so late and then the project is then suspended? Chair, there are two investigations that have been reported on the report, and the third one being the SIU. One would be interested to know the report that we get a report, because this one is just a report, the official report that's given to us by ESCOM to say this is exactly what happened. But we may be willing to see the investigation, the report that was done through investigations, because each time the entity would say you are doing the investigation, the second time they did the same, up until then the SIU was in fact involved. So if you care to know, other than the 336 flats that were going to be built, with the money that it accumulated to the 840, we could have built 1,680 units. It tells us how some other people, I'm saying, in many instances, you know, people look at, or the contractors or any other people look at ESCOM as a milk cow. Everything is just inflated. Don't worry, ESCOM will pay. But I must say, this is the project that reflects badly on us as politicians, as well as on ESCOM, let alone the DPE, because the department could have in fact seen this, and that person be straight taken to jail. You know, I wish to second the proposal by Honorable Mkhwanazi that let's visit the Mundupi, Kusile, as well as these facts, so that we see them. It looks as if the way it is reported, no one may be willing to buy those flats. With the impairments that have been there, it escalates now, the price or whatever, the money used escalates, it's now 918. That's very bad. It's not reflecting good on us, it's an embarrassment on our side. Chair, let me go to another going to manifest how expensive it is to maintain ESCOM. You know, I was again perturbed, worried about the fact that each unit within, let's say, Mutupi, is 300 million. Each unit. With Mutupi, I think we've got about 6 units within Mutupi, right? So you'll have to say 6 by the 300 million. And then, Chair, what's worrying me now is that there are defects. Whether these defects are operational or structural, but at the end of the day, who is accountable for such defects? Again, that is going to be borne by ESCOM. With the contracts, and who appoints all these contractors that are working there? So you get worried, Chair, in terms of the things that are in fact happening. If, Chair, I may go to this one page, this page 4 on current slide. Chair, I want to find out, does ESCOM have option other than accept these conditions that are put down by the contractors? It looks as if at the end of the day, ESCOM pays for 3 aspects. It's transport, it's mining, as well as coal. That's how they determine the price. Everything is ESCOM, the price, transport is ESCOM, mining is ESCOM, as well as coal. It tends to be too expensive, then. So it will be very expensive then for ESCOM to survive. Chair, on page 5, I wanted to find out what is the impact, because it looks as if the contractually, in terms of volumes, we were to get something and we are getting lesser. How does that impact on ESCOM? The cost plus, they call it, there is a concept that is called cost plus. It looks as if my interpretation is an incentive. If the contractor is in a position to produce what is required, more money is given to them. Lesser than that, I'm not sure what's happening. But I'm worried that how do we control the fluctuations of prices, the charges that are being leveled to us, or perhaps to ESCOM as an entity? That's too much for ESCOM then to shoulder. It's very expensive. So let me wait there because of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kumede. Honorable Komani? Honorable Komani, I saw you here.
I'm here, Chair. I'm sorry, I was muted.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee, ESCOM as the department led by the Minister. Chair, one is a bit worried, as Honorable Kumede has just said. It seems ESCOM has got too much load to carry. But nevertheless, let one go straight to the question. It remains a serious concern, Chairperson. And ESCOM should maybe advise us on what is the plan to address this at this point. Chair, the next question would then be, the rating agencies have made some findings regarding the ESCOM. And how are these findings being attended to, or how are they being addressed by Eskom? The third one, Chair, would then be, given the court order against the NERSA, what bearing has this NERSA decision impact on the poor consumers? We have heard that they have given another indication yesterday, but nevertheless, they should respond to this. Chair, when one goes to Mirupi and Kusilim, having spoken to the defect by the presenter, what is the liability point to either party? Because they said they are now sharing the liability. What will then happen to the already split share? If then maybe the liability goes either to Eskom or to the contractor, what will then happen to the one that has already been shared? On the finalization of the remaining plans, how much was spent and how much is left? And is this remainder enough for the completion of both Mirupi and Kusile, if maybe we may be cleared? And in the interest of transparency, maybe if you can know as to how much was spent, how much is left, how much is anticipated to finish, so that we may not be surprised by Eskom and maybe requesting the bailout again. Chair, when one speaks to this residential development, it is very worrisome. Because I think for one to engage on a project, there should be a need. There be a need, there should be stakeholder engagement. So having heard and listened to the presentation, Chairperson, when we find that there's no one to occupy those flats, one would then be forced to ask, were there engagements? Why was there a decision? Was that a political decision? And for whose benefit, Chair, was this decision? Because there's so much lost in this project, and we cannot now be sharing that there's no one who's going to occupy the flat. And in fact, was there an analysis? Was there like I said, was there a need? If there was a need, and when the challenges started to arise, why they not picked up by either Eskom or any other party who were formed part? Unless if there was a political motivation or some force from the outside. Because, you know, Chair, like the Honourable Member has just said, you'd find that when things are being decided, they are done politically. But then when the blame is to be placed, unfortunately the managers who were forced to engage or to execute the mandate are the ones who have been faced with the ex. But Chair, that is very, very, very worrisome. And having what is the initial plan for the doesn't want to sit there, who were those flats built for? One must ask that. And Chair, I don't think it is enough for us to hear that the general manager was dismissed. And I don't think it is enough and it is fair for this committee to be told that there was an external investigation engaged on. Because we've got, government has got agencies which have dealt with this matter. And so much money should have been spent on this exercise. But Chair, we are also not told of how much was spent on this exercise. I think we should be told on how much was spent on that exercise. And Chair, seated here, one would as well want to say, okay, fine, the general manager has been dismissed. If his packages has been released, they have been released. Now the report is taken to the SIU for possible maybe recovery or something. How will Eskom then, if there is possible recovery, how will we then recover? Because the minister has been used by the receiver. was it not fair to refer the matter at an earlier stage to the agencies so that maybe the recovery should be imminent? Because as we are speaking now, we are just hoping that we would recover. And such has been referred to as what like Honourable Maoto has said. There, we have anticipated corruption, we have anticipated so many things in this exercise. But be it as it may, we did not do the correct thing. But then maybe if ESCOM could take us into confidence, because we cannot just lose money, and we cannot just be losing, and with the hope that the report will be referred to the SI. This is not the first report, Chairperson, that ESCOM says it will be referred to the SIU. This is not the first report that has never borne any fruit. When I was serving in the portfolio of appropriation tax, we had gone to ESCOM. There were similar cases. To date, Chairperson, there is no consequence management. There is no recovery of funds. But maybe in this one, if we can maybe be taken into confidence as to how are we going to recover this money? Because it needs to be recovered. And someone needs to be held accountable. And we need to outgo this stage of wanting to blame the manager. And we as politicians, we know for a fact that this is our political decision. This, as Honourable Agumele has just said, ESCOM is seen as this cow which is going to be milked by everyone. Say. Anyway, Chairperson, when one goes to the electricity tariff, maybe the minister would then take us into confidence because there has been a ministerial, inter-ministerial team that has been formed to engage on matters, particularly on the municipalities that host ESCOM. Maybe they can put us to speed as to how far is their progress, how best is it assisting ESCOM, and how long or the time frame given to the municipalities or the plan given that the municipalities should pay ESCOM. And I also want to re-emphasize the fact that was raised by Honourable Maoto to say that we have several times requested the list of the companies that still owe ESCOM. Maybe if this is the time that we need to have that, Chair, from the Minister. And Chairperson, I also want to reiterate in terms of the electricity that I don't see us being part or accepting the call for suggesting the tariff hike. It cannot be changed. I just want to reiterate that is going to be met with a serious rejection, particularly from us. And finally, Chairperson, what are the technical issues that are relating to the Duva Unit 3 incident? Maybe if you can be taken through that, maybe we'll understand. Thank you very much for now.
Thank you so much, Honourable Komanya. Honourable Malinga.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself. Good morning to the Minister, the DPE, ESCOM representation on the platform, and colleagues in the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, much has been said, but I want to just commend ESCOM on the issue of recovering the money or expelling the general manager that has been found wanting. Chairperson, I hope the money is not only going to be recovered from the general manager, but also the contractors who failed or who escalated figures. Chairperson, let me also agree with my colleagues that you can't move in terms of this Verge residential. You can't move from a 264 million project to 840. That's absurd, Chair. It's very absurd. It means project management is not really taken well in at ESCOM. So I think, Chairperson Vele, we will really ask what was the need, because basically the residential areas were built for the artisans. Are artisans not getting housing allowances? So if that is not the case, then I think maybe, I'm not sure, Chair, because you get the issue of litigation, the issue of these design issues, which is not on, Chair. Chairperson, let me quickly move to Kusile and Medupi. Chair, I wish to say to the ministry that the same process that is unfolding with these residential flats should also unfold with the architects or the contractors of Kusile and Medupi. Also here, Chairperson, it means project management it was found wanting. Because when you start a project, you have design, you have all the specifications. So how come now that they are dealing, ESCOM is dealing with defects, Chair, that are delaying the supply of the constant supply of energy in the country. Lastly, Chair, I want to really be taken on board in terms of why ESCOM has relegated on the cost plus miles, because I heard the presenter giving us the advantages of having the cost plus miles. The advantages, they are cited as ESCOM had a stable resource. ESCOM had reduced incentive check. So why under investment on something that was yielding positive results for ESCOM? The issue as the grill, Chair, I would wish, because lastly they said grill still has reserves that have poor quality, to check if DPE has maybe engaged DMRE in terms of how to use the safe carbon emission method to cap pollution, so that we don't have litigations in terms of environmental issues and all that stuff that is on the news. I think it was on the news that pollution is affecting people around Grill and everywhere else. Chair, let me stop there, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Malina. Honourable Chabalala.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning to everybody in the meeting, even the executive and the officials. Chair, we would have seen yesterday's COPA where ESCOM reportedly that it had applied for 70 billion in spending deviations under a year. Now, I want to find out from the DM as the executive, because deviations are applied by the entity to the ministry for signing. Now, this has occurred in ESCOM case due to the renegotiation of coal contract, and that's what has been reported. Now, it is a reflection of not yet engaging in proper planning, if you ask me. So the ESCOM biggest deviation was not approved. The question is, what is the rationale for the application for the deviation? The second really example of ESCOM for deviation, it has been recorded that it was due to unplanned breakdown and needed this space, and this was not planned for. Now, the issue is within the planning. I really feel that ESCOM needs to find a way to deal with these issues within the planned budget. We really need to recognize the progress made really from the ESCOM thus far. And the question is, when is it expected that the defect would be resolved and the plant functions normally? And how does the CAPEX overrun impact on electricity tariffs, which means that the cost efficiency becomes very critical? And how is ESCOM dealing with this? And while I'm on cost overruns, and meaning that, this issue of higher tariffs, it becomes required. Now, going forward, is this the major issue? I want to hear from Eskom. The issue of the flat project, and I want to support what my colleague Mukwanas had proposed around portfolio committee doing oversight there. And of course, also Honorable Malinga, where she acknowledges the fact that the manager has been held accountable and investigations are continuing. So I want to say this reflects the historical lack of financial controls. Therefore, at this point, one could definitely say that the new management, the fact that it's not allowing such, it is really commendable. But it doesn't end there, Chair. I think we need to have a special portfolio committee where we really get from Eskom all the cost plus mines, a special briefing around this coal mining company. I think it's really important to really get, as members of parliament, a sight around this. The Medupe and Kusile to date, I did hear when the presentation was going on that indeed there is budget that has been spent. However, Chair, I really feel that we need to get a proper final cost that will be fully operational on coal-powered power stations. So really, the original build cost, including the cost of to correct the defect, I think we need to get that. The Eskom should really give us on the maintenance program, which power stations are under maintenance and which would have been returned to service. Part of this load shedding most of the time, and what we hear, is this thing of maintenance. So can we understand which power stations really are under this maintenance and which has been returned to service? And what is the prospect for load shedding in the month of February 2021? There was no way we could have this meeting and load shedding will not be addressed. The Eskom, we did get the presentation around the NERSA's decision to grant Eskom an additional 6 billion in revenue. And now, how will this affect the entity's income statement? And you will know where I'm going to a point where we're speaking about Eskom being its own financial efficient. So just to give us just a sense, if you had looked into it from a financial point of view, how will this affect your entity's income statement? Eskom objective is to significantly reduce the debt balance by 200 billion, we understand, and a closing cash balance of 30 billion and earning before income tax, depreciation and amortization. Now, the margin of 35% to enable the entity to achieve independent financial stability. What is the progress on achieving this target? And this Eskom should be in a position to update us on the outstanding municipality debt and what has been the progress on collecting the outstanding funds. And I'll keep on reiterating the issue when it comes to municipal debt. We over time emphasize the issue of Soweto debt because it becomes a huge debt. However, there has been progress from our last meetings that we had around collection of municipality collection from Soweto. All we needed, and I've been saying this to Eskom, can you give us a spreadsheet that shows us progress in terms of projects that have been implementation, especially on these meter boxes that you've been putting on, because over time they are proving to be able to assist in revenue collection, because when people don't buy electricity or purchase, there's no way they'll have power, so it pushes the customers and consumers to do so. So can we get that spreadsheet so that we are able to deal with it? I'm highly disappointed on the issue because I did raise this thing about a place in Tshwane, where I did mention that in Tshwane over, now it's going for 3 years. That committee doesn't have electricity. The issues about the planning of that community, the sheikhs and people taking electricity legally and so forth, those are structured, they are there, we understand it. However, we cannot fold our arms and say there is these challenges, we just report on them. As much as intergovernmental, there will be those type of discussion that ensued, can we get what is the plan for Eskom to ensure it doesn't penalize customers. The Eskom should really update us on the utility debt program. And what does the company predict to have a loan and book? The company can maintain itself and not rely on government support. I think that is something that has been emphasized over time. My last point, Shepherdson, is that the matter on the role of the chief restructuring officer with respect to Eskom, what has his term of reference and why was the report not submitted to government? A priority for the Eskom CEO is that during the restructuring of the entity, good governance is maintained. However, Eskom received a qualified audit for the 2019-20 financial year with high levels of fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well as irregular expenditure. How is the company progressing? An audit finding also was made in respect of insufficient delegation of authority according to Eskom. Now, this delegation of authority had been updated. Why was then a finding with respect to the delegation of authority not being adequate? Because it would have been really updated. The right size Eskom number of staff due to COVID-19 and over what time frames will Eskom achieve this? What is the current number of staff at the company and the costs associated with this? I'm raising this point on the issue of the staff components because we would have seen what needed to be done around the right sizing in terms of your slide presentation, the issues of severance packages already mentioned as well through natural attrition. Perhaps I'm just asking around that specifically. The entity has also filled all crucial executive positions, something that we must really have. Thank you so much, Chairperson, and we thank the Eskom management. They're really doing a good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Honorable members, we have to take it back now to the Eskom Group CEO and his team, including the minister. I think the minister is supposed to start or end. I don't know how the arrangement with this response. Can I give it to you, minister?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, and thanks for all of the questions. I just want to make some general points and then refer the more specific operational issues to the CEO and his team. The first point I want to make, Chair, is that, as I said yesterday, that SOEs, like Eskom, are still pretty much in the recovery phase, meaning that projects like the Vulcan project, and that's a small one, compared to some of the others, go back sometimes 10, 15 years. And the current management is now asked to account for decisions that would have been taken in the early 2000s, for example, as is the case with Medupi and Kusile. So I'd just like the committee and those listening in to keep that in mind. And to the best of our ability, I can assure you on behalf of the board and the management of Eskom that whatever information is available and that we can find will be put before Parliament whenever there are questions raised. So there's no issues in relation to that. And then some of the questions that were asked, I want to respond to myself and then hand over. The question was raised about recovery of funds. We have given these answers before, but perhaps the CEO can repeat them. You'll remember that from the company called ABB, there was a recovery of 1.55 billion rands, and similarly, I think McKinsey paid a certain amount and other companies have paid certain amounts as well. But as the investigation processes and assessments go on in Eskom itself, I can assure you that there will be further processes that will be put in place, some of which I will discuss with the board in the next fortnight or so. And wherever we find that there was culpability by a former board member or former executive who currently are making a lot of sounds out there in the public space to distract everybody's attention from their role in what has happened at Eskom, we will track down that money, and there are ways of doing that. And when we make some progress and have certainty about the path that we're going to follow, we'll certainly come back to you as a committee, but also to Parliament more generally. The second set of issues is around some of the issues raised by Honourable Kachalia. Is this business a business that can be, inverted commas, saved and repositioned? I think that is what government is committed to doing. But just, we have to keep in mind what I said earlier on, which is that these are historically determined processes in many ways. And the attempts being made at the moment and over the last, say, 2 years and the year, 1 or 2 years that will follow, are attempts to ensure that we do reposition issues such as debt, sustainable tariff increases, both for consumers and for businesses. And at the same time, the general pattern in many of the SOEs, including Eskom, is not just paying recovery, but also ensuring that new business models and operational models are evolving. So in the first instance, it's the implementation of the Eskom roadmap and the creation of an independent transmission entity. And you've had information as a committee indicating that that will be completed by December 2021. And in the second instance, responding to the energy market, which has significant changes taking place globally, in view of the climate change challenges, but also at the same time ensuring that we implement government's IRP 19 within that overall framework. So it's a complex environment in which to prosecute the just transition, and at some stage I think the Eskom management team can brief you and the committee chair on what exactly does the just transition mean, what are some of the discussions and preparations that are taking place, and how will some of the older power stations be repositioned, etc. On the question of cost-plus mines, this is a historically determined way of doing business, firstly. Secondly, there were commercial benefits arising from this particular model, because remember the model was that what we would have is power stations being built in or around coal mines that could assure firstly the quality of coal, but secondly the quantity of coal that would be required during the lifetime or lifetime of that particular power station. And the additional investment that we are talking about on behalf of Eskom is about ensuring that the benefits of such a formula be looked at. I think Honourable Mautwe makes an important point about whether there could be an equity stake taken by government as a result of its contribution, and the Eskom management team will look into the viability of that. The state as a minor, well, the state does have an SOE in the form of a mining company, which reports into the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. But they're not ready to take on this kind of responsibility, nor would government have the incentives to, or the cash for that matter, to put into such a venture. So in many of these instances, when the private sector is being brought in or asked to play a particular role or provided with an opportunity, it's about ensuring that private sector capital can be drawn into some of the projects that we're actually talking about, and that includes the question of coal. What is worrying, though, as the CEO will explain, is the quality of coal at some of the power stations, which plays a highly disruptive role in the operational mechanisms, leads to trips of one sort or another, and that then leads to shortage of supply in terms of megawatts, which then could lead, if they have too many of those, to the kind of load shedding phenomenon that we have. Although load shedding as a separate item also requires more than just fixing the quality of coal, it needs the multi-pronged strategy to be able to do so. So there's wisdom in the cost-plus mines, but we'll certainly take into account some of the contributions made. Reference was made, I think, to slide 9 and Glencore, but I think we read that slide properly. According to that slide and what's in there on the left-hand side, as I read it, Eskom did not enter into any contract with Glencore because of the price issue. And that's in that slide, but the CEO can correct me if I'm wrong in that particular regard. On the question of the flats, the management team can provide you with the specifics, but there has been some consequence management, but we need to know what happened to this company, who ran the company, and I think it's fair for the committee to raise those sorts of questions as well. But before I move from the coal issue, Chairperson, I don't think the committee has had an opportunity to invite the coal mining community to appear before the committee and to explain itself in respect of many of the questions that you've actually raised, whether it's the consistency of supply, the level of investment that is actually taking place and or not taking place, how do they see the future of coal, how do they see the global market as far as coal is concerned, and how do they see the domestic market in which Eskom is the biggest consumer of coal. But secondly, there's a lot of malfeasance that fits into the coal supply chain. And how does the private sector explain itself? Whether it is the miners, whether it is the trucking community, or whether it is employees of Eskom itself. So you might want to consider calling in the coal companies in order to get some explanations directly from them and give Eskom an opportunity to respond as well. On the question of the corporations or companies that owe money to Eskom, there was a question asked on the 4th of December and it was responded to on the 2nd of February, where the top 50 corporate companies have been listed in the annexure to the answer given. So this is a question asked by, I think, Honorable Mountway. So the answers have already been provided in the question. I'm not sure whether Parliament has published the answer, but you can certainly find it there. On the question of the CRO and the report The CRO is now part of history. We did explore certain debt options via the CRO. There is a report of sorts that has been presented. Eskom has done its own work in this particular regard. And the most recent development here is the NEDLAC compact that has been signed on the question of Eskom and Eskom debt and Eskom sustainability. And the question is, how do we start giving effect to that? And we can assure you that there's a lot more intensive work that will go into this during the first half of this particular year. Let me pause there, Chair, and then hand over to the CEO and his team. And if there are any other issues I wish to add, I will come in again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister and honourable members, for the questions that you have posed. Let me first start off by saying that we would welcome an oversight visit by the committee to Volga, Medupi and Kusile. We will liaise with the secretariat of the committee to facilitate that visit, and we look forward to hosting you at our sites and to brief you more fully on the issues that we have uncovered at those three sites. I will try to respond to the questions and refer to my colleagues to assist me in the detail of the questions. As the Minister has stated, there is a significant impact on our power generation as a consequence of coal quality. Our most reliable power stations are those power stations that are served by linked mines, and we therefore have to find a way to accommodate a greater diversity of coal suppliers while at the same time being able to blend and homogenize coal quality. We are in discussions with Transnet to establish a so-called inland terminal, coal terminal, that will enable us to do exactly that, to still continue to buy from junior and emerging miners while at the same time being able to manage the coal quality going into our power stations more closely. So there are a number of proposals that we are investigating in this regard. It is in a very early feasibility stage, so it's not going to happen overnight, but we are working on it to address our coal quality. As far as the irregular expenditure on the Volga flats is concerned, obviously that's a very disappointing saga. It has taken a very long time for us to resolve this matter. Just to again reiterate, Eskom unfortunately does not have powers of arrest. We are dependent on the law enforcement authorities to do that when we bring cases and dockets to their attention. But we are making very peace with the SIU to conclude civil claims from the former general manager to the tune of some 75.8 million rand that we are seeking to recover from the individual concerned. I must again just emphasize that our cooperation with the SIU is really exceptionally good, I want to thank Advocate Mutibi and his team for the great support that they are giving to Eskom to enable us to bring these miscreants to book. The Honourable Kachalia asked a number of questions, and we agree that we need to make Eskom a sustainable business going forward, depending on continuing liquidity assistance from National Treasury, which essentially just helps us to pay our interest bill. It doesn't help us to pay down the principal debt, is very important. I will try and answer the five questions that the Honourable Member raised. If he requires further detail, then we are very glad to provide that detail to him. So net debt service cost is 32 billion rand per annum, which is a huge burden It's a very significant cost item in our income statement, bearing in mind that before this debt service cost at an operating profit level, therefore earnings before interest and taxes, Eskom was actually profitable in the previous financial year. So that just tells you that the debt is really the biggest challenge that we've got. The exact level of the proposed tariff increase in terms of the High Court order based on an agreement reached between NERSA and Eskom, the proposed level of increase, which now needs to go through various approval authorities in order for us to implement it by the 1st of April, is 15.63%. It is our anticipation that if we are able to have a further increase in the following financial year of another 15%, we will be able to cap further increases at a CPI-related measure. And that CPI-related measure, of course, has to then be augmented with a provision for carbon tax and any excessive IPP recoveries. We think after that, provided, of course, we resolve the municipal debt challenge, which is a significant one, Eskom should be a sustainable business going forward. This is, I think, a promising way forward for us. There is some pain to be achieved, but we also need to recognize if we as Eskom are unable to reward our capital with the current level of tariffs, then private investors into the generation sector, which we are hoping to attract, will also not be able to do so. So the cost reflectivity of tariffs is an important enabling lever. To respond to the Honourable Martwe's questions on the Creel contract and what plans there are to replace the supply, as well as questions related to the underinvestment in cost-plus mines, I'm going to ask Snell Nagar to respond to those questions. Snell, please.
Thank you, Andre. With regards to the Creel and sort of all the cost plus mine business cases, the two significant quality extensions we have is Creel and Matla. On the Creel colliery, we're looking and we're already investing into what we call the next reserves, which are right next to or adjacent to the current cost plus mine delegated reserves. So there was a question, if the contracts are coming to an end at a certain date, why are we continuing to invest, or why would it make sense? And the intention is to look beyond the contract end date to mine resources and reserves that extend to beyond that contract date. So on the Creel, we're looking at the Block F project, which we're looking to realize about 4 million tons of coal from that particular project, 4 million tons per annum. And we're also then looking at the open cast reserve, they call it the pit 11 and 13, which we're looking to get about another 3 million tons out of there. So the long-term strategy for Creel Colliery is to get the production up to 7.5 million tons if all the business case stack up. The Block F business case is already stacked up and we're investing into it. And the pit 11 and 13, the feasibility studies to progress with the project is continuing. And as soon as we are ready, we will then approach the necessary governance committees to prove the positive business case and then start the investment into those colleries. On the Matla Reserve, similarly, honorable members, the Matla coal resource, so like I said, the contract ends in 2023, but I estimate the remaining reserves, which are not part of the dedicated contract at this point in time, to be in excess of maybe around 200 million tons. So there's significant unmined reserves that are right next to the power station or right next to the current mining operation. And we look to extend this Matla contract into those adjacent reserves and prove that be a positive business case. And the positive business case that I refer to is not only financial, but also from a quality perspective. So can the mine or the adjacent mine supply the required reserves, or do we need to do something at the power stations to check the scope? And what is the sweet spot or the optimum business case to achieve both? And that's what we need to put onto the table before we extend the contract. When I look at also like the Kutala coal supply agreement, that is an agreement whereby there isn't, call it, adjacent reserves. And therefore, I have explained that when a Cosmos mine doesn't make business sense to invest in it, we then accept or potentially look at how we resolve that issue by looking at different supply options into the adjacent power station, rather than trying to invest in it where it doesn't make business sense. So we certainly look at this from all angles, and not only with a mindset to invest in these colliers. Andre, there was also a question on the management of these cost plus mines. We certainly manage these cost plus mines on a monthly, daily basis, where there are teams looking at management meetings, technical meetings. We look at life of mine plans. So we certainly look at all of these and manage it on a continuous and daily basis as we deal with the cost plus miners. So there's a lot more Eskom involvement in managing a cost plus mine than there is on, call it, the other coal supply agreements. I think that covers on the cost plus mine issue, Andre. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Snell. Much appreciated. So just to respond on the fact that the stock levels in December 2018 were historically low, which caused us to have to enter into short-term contracts 2 months after the adoption of a long-term plan. And I think the response to that is that the effect of the long-term plan clearly was not able to be implemented in the 2 months before the coal stock shortage manifested itself. We are making good progress on performing the reliability maintenance program. This is an exhaustive program. As we communicated in January of last year, while we execute this program, there is going to be an enhanced risk of load shedding, which is the unfortunate result of having to catch up with this backlog of maintenance. We have taken out the equivalent of 2 major power stations to perform this maintenance. That has created, of course, a capacity tightness, which when we have unplanned outages in some of our other units, there is then the unfortunate necessity to implement load shedding. We anticipate that by the time that the 11 units that we have maintained, that when they return to service by April of this year, so the first wave should be finished by then, that we will be in a position where we can significantly reduce the risk of load shedding. And when the second tranche is completed, that we will then have seen a step change in reducing the risk of load shedding. It will not be entirely eliminated. There is a capacity shortfall that needs to be addressed by bringing more capacity online, but then we will have broken the back of the backlog in maintenance. The cost of repairing the defects, I think as was stated in the presentation, it's about 300 million rand per unit at Medupi so far. While we have not absolved the contractor, the Mitsubishi Hitachi joint venture, of accountability in this regard, in order to ensure that we can bring the capacity onto the grid as quickly as possible, we have agreed with them that at this stage we will share those costs 50-50 in order not to hold up the putting in place of those design corrections so that we can unlock the much needed capacity. And in the background there is a separate commercial stroke contractual process on the go in order to address the accountability for that particular project. And of course, we are of the view that the design defects are in fact the responsibility of the contractor, and that the full cost has to be borne by them. In terms of the budget, the current allowed budget, as was communicated on the slides, we regard as being sufficient to complete both those projects. So we do not at this stage anticipate that there will be a requirement for further funds to be appropriated for the completion of these two projects. Caleb, maybe I can ask you to address the questions on the classification of Wilge as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then if you can also address some of the issues that were raised in terms of the audit qualification while you've got the floor. Caleb, over to you, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. With regard to the fruitless and wasteful for Wilge, I think as indicated in the slide, this was presented to the EXCO in December 2019, and once we became aware of it at an EXCO level, then we accounted for it in terms of fruitless and wasteful. I think I just want to reiterate to the members that, as the Minister said, as management, if we discover these items, we will make sure that the financials then are fairly representative of these irregular expenditures. And as you've seen in the last 2 to 3 years, the number of irregular expenditures as well as fruitless and wasteful disclosure from Eskom has increased. What are we doing about it in terms of the audit findings? We do have an established loss control function that we are currently capacitating, and we are also working closely with National Treasury and the auditors to address some of the backlog of the condonations. And you will see that the trend in new irregular contracts that are disclosed in the financials is downward sloping, which is a positive indication of the discipline and the controls that are being implemented. Andre, I think I've covered those issues. Thanks. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Caleb. The Bowman's appointment, that was made some years ago. We are trying to find out exactly when that decision was made, and then also how much they have been paid. Unfortunately, we don't have those numbers to hand, but we will record the question and then report back to the committee in order to answer the Honourable Mortwe's questions. We have embarked on a process to recover, in response to the Honourable Peary's question, monies that have been misappropriated. As the Minister has indicated, we have been able to recover 1.577 billion from ADB. We've recovered 1.1 billion rand from McKinsey. We have recovered 177 million rand from Deloitte. We're at the moment pursuing a claim for 93 million rand against PwC. There is a claim of 3.8 billion rand against 12 former Eskom board members and executives that we are pursuing, including members of the Gupta family. And these actions will continue as we make progress on identifying incidents of malfeasance that has taken place in the past. So we will continue with that. On the Duva incident, Duva has been, of course, Duva 3, we had a turbine overspeed incident on Unit 3, and that led to a catastrophic failure on that unit. The unit has been out of operation ever since. Eskom at the time then approached the markets. Eskom awarded a contract to a consortium called Dongfeng under doubtful circumstances. This contract award is currently being investigated by the SIU, and the contract has been cancelled. Having regard to the cost of rebuilding the Duva Unit 3, with escalation and delays, the cost is now estimated to be some 11 billion rand. And by looking at the expected remaining life of the Duva power station until 2034, we don't anticipate that we will be able to recover that amount of capital investment over that time period. And in November of last year, the board accordingly took a decision to cancel that project and not to proceed with the reconstruction of Duva Unit 3, which from a business perspective is entirely the correct decision, I would submit. So the rating agencies, we very much are linked to the sovereign rating. So whenever there is a change in the sovereign rating, the Eskom rating changes in lockstep, typically a couple of days after the sovereign rating changes. Our rating changes as well, and that's purely because of our very close link to the national economy and also to the fiscus. And we are therefore highly dependent on ratings agencies' views of the sovereign. And we would hope that as we improve our own financial sustainability, that ultimately that would have a positive impact on the ratings agencies' perceptions of Eskom and possibly even of the sovereign itself. In response to the Honourable Clerk, we are very aware of the implications of the NERSA decision on consumers. We understand that we live in very economically constrained and straitened times, and we have therefore put forward some proposals that government is considering in a number of fora for mitigating the impact on, in particular, the poorest of the poor by allowing them greater access to, for example, free basic electricity. But this is not an Eskom decision. This is something that rests in the policy space, but we have certainly made those proposals to the relevant government departments. In terms of the defaulting municipalities, of the 36, 37 billion rands worth of debt that is owed to us by defaulting municipalities, about 70% is owed by the top 10 municipalities and 82 by the top 20 municipalities. So while it is a very concerning problem, it is confined to a relatively small number of municipalities. We have over the years attempted to recover monies from municipalities. We have spent a lot of time on legal fees. We have attached bank accounts. We have attached assets. We have applied the nominated maximum demand, and this has created service delivery issues in addition to the lack of capacity in those municipalities. We have recently adopted a very constructive approach. We call it active partnering with municipalities, where we assist municipalities in order to run their distribution networks better and more effectively. Also do catch-up maintenance, install prepaid meters, and effectively operate as the agent of that municipality. Also collect the revenue that is due, and that revenue will be paid into an Eskom bank account, and then The idea is that we will at least be able to service our current account every month while we capacitate that municipality to properly run an electricity distribution system. So the first number of agreements have already been reached with distressed municipalities, and we are certainly hopeful that this is a new positive way forward of addressing certainly the further build-up of debt due to non-payment of current accounts. We are in discussions with the political task team on ways to address the legacy debt, and these discussions are ongoing. We are not yet at a position where we are able to convey any news in this regard, because no final decision has been taken on that. The higher cost of IPPs signed in bid window 1 and 2, those are high, significantly higher than our own cost of generation. And there are efforts ongoing between the Department of Public Enterprises and the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy to renegotiate some of those contracts, particularly having regard to the lower cost of financing that is currently applicable. And we are engaging with the IPP office as well as with DMRE with a view to exploring other ways of reducing those costs. But of course, these are contracts, long-term contracts entered into with the backing of the sovereign. So from an investor certainty point of view, we have to be very respectful of abiding by the contractual terms that were initially agreed. The Honourable Clark also asked questions around various environmental violations. For the year to date, bearing in mind that our financial year ends the end of March, we have recorded 62 environmental legal contraventions. 53 are water incidents and 6 are for air emissions. And in addition, power stations have been operating for 0.87% of the time under National Environmental Management Act Section 30 reported incidents. During the previous financial year, we ended with 59 environmental legal contravention incidents, of which 39 were water, 17 were for air emissions, and 3 were for waste contraventions. There has been one criminal case opened against Eskom, which is currently finding its way through the Magistrates Court in Uchis. The first appearance has already taken place by Eskom in that case, and that is the only criminal prosecution that is relevant at this point in time, or that is ongoing. We are, in terms of the question on the writing off of various amounts, of course, when we write it off from an accounting perspective, that doesn't mean that we stop our pursuit to recover those funds. Those are two separate actions. Certainly, writing off doesn't mean that we, from a civil perspective, give up the pursuit of money, as is evidenced by the fact that we have gone after ABB, and we will continue to go after some of the other companies involved, in particular at Kusile. And again, as I believe the SIU is reporting right now to Scopa, we are continuing with those investigations in respect of Kusile, where we are investigating, or the SIU is investigating, 24 packages, 5 at Medupi, 1 at Ingula, and 1 at Majuba, and 1 at Matla. So there are, at this point in time, a total of 25 packages under investigation. two cases have been referred to the NPA and two former Eskom officials have appeared in court, and then we have briefed counsel for civil referrals in order to set up the relevant civil claims. In total, we have seen 39 NPA referrals, 32 referrals to the Asset Forfeiture Unit, and three disciplinary referrals. Two officials resigned, one was dismissed, and then there are these four civil litigation matters. So I hope that that gives the committee the assurance that with the assistance of the SIU, we are vigorously pursuing contractors and monies not that was irregularly or unlawfully paid out. Skills, indeed, are a major concern for us, and we have identified a number of current Eskom employees who are approaching retirement, and these so-called greybeards, although just to be correct, some of them are female, they will be deployed to transfer skills in a structured way as part of our Operations Excellence Program. This program has already been kicked off. It is a very well-defined program that will address 19 identified key priority areas per power station, and we will use the available skills that we have across Eskom to bolster and transfer knowledge to our power station teams, and also in our transmission and distribution businesses. Similar programs will be followed in order to ensure that we share the knowledge that we have inside the organization as best we can. Chair, with your permission, with regard to the detailed questions on Volga, on whether it went out on tender and so forth, if I may request your indulgence and by requesting if it would be acceptable if we responded in writing to those questions. It's a fairly detailed list of questions, and I wouldn't want to not do justice to the Honourable Clark's questions in this regard. So we will make a note of those questions and, again, cooperate with the Secretariat to respond to those. In reply to the Honourable Gomez's question, I may say that we are in advanced discussions with the Department of Human Settlements with a view to making available the Volga flats to distressed communities in the vicinity. And they have confirmed in writing to us that they are keenly interested in pursuing this as an option. And we are therefore very pleased that we should be able to find, ultimately, in spite of this very deplorable overexpenditure on the project, that we will be able to find a useful purpose for this particular project. The Honourable Kumani again raised the issue of the impact on poor consumers, and in our presentation we highlighted a number of interventions that we believe could assist the poor consumer in mitigating the impact of tariff increases. We are very sensitive to that. The point to make, though, is that it's either a question of recovering higher tariffs through or from the electricity consumer, or requesting the already very hard-pressed fiscus to make further contributions to Eskom. And ultimately, from a sustainability point of view, the higher tariff is the solution to implement. In terms of the Honourable Malinga questions asked about the project management at Madupi and Kusile, we agree with the Honourable Member's statements around project management. I think in retrospect, it's very clear that our project execution methodology was wrong. Eskom assumed the responsibility for interface management, and this was, I think, in hindsight, a mistake. And as a consequence, we had significant slippage and overexpenditure on that project, and many claims that we had to entertain. We will make a presentation to the committee on the way forward with cost plus mines, and then on air quality, I can give you the assurance that we are working hard to be compliant. First of all, we've got two units off at the Kendall Power Station for extensive repair work that will bring us in compliance with air quality emission standards. But then secondly, we are pursuing a number of projects which come at significant expense. And this is part of an opportunity that we've identified to repurpose some of our power stations that have reached the end of life to ensure that we can still assist the communities that have given us 50, 60 years of their lives in order to ensure that we don't simply pull the plug on those communities and walk away. And if I may, with respect, reiterate the Honourable Minister's proposal that we come to the committee and make a presentation on the just energy transition and our thoughts around that and the role that Eskom can play in enabling that. Finally, if I can deal with the Honourable Chabalala's questions, the Honourable Member is quite correct. Our planning for spares procurement is not what it should be. This is the subject of another extensive exercise to ensure that we sell obsolete and redundant spares, that we free up cash from inventory that we no longer require on the one hand, but on the other hand, that we also ensure that we have the necessary spares on hand to do the job that is required. This is a very complex exercise, as you may imagine, but we are making good progress on that. Linked to that is significant work that is required to be done on our SAP system, which is our enterprise resource planning system, our computer system that we use to scan in various items that we procure. And one of the first steps was to prevent the uncoded purchase of spares. That has now been stopped, and we are now in a position to bring some more order to what we buy and how we buy it in order to bring prices down, but also in order to ensure that we buy the right spares at the right time. We have, I think, addressed matters relating to Medupi and Kusile. I may just add that we are obliged in terms of the World Bank loan agreements for Medupi to construct a flue gas desulfurization plant at Medupi. Such a plant is already budgeted for and provided for at Kusile. But at Medupi, there is further expenditure that will be required. We are looking at ways of mitigating that expense, but it could be in the order of some 40 billion rand. So that is a big number that is still out there, but we are investigating, as I said, ways of bringing that number down to a manageable level while respecting the loan obligations that we have committed to with the World Bank. If I may ask the officials from DPE to respond on the CRO, and then finally, if I may just comment on the right sizing of our business in terms of the numbers that we have, and then I'll pause, Chair. I know I've taken up a lot of time. We have embarked on a series of voluntary severance programs. The first voluntary severance program resulted in the exit of 184 senior managers from the organization. The payback on the packages that we have offered them in terms of the savings that accrue is just over 1 year. So from a business perspective, that certainly is a very good investment in terms of cost savings. And then we are continuing with our efforts to further reduce our headcount while avoiding Section 189 forced retrenchments, and we are on the trajectory to reach our target of a significantly reduced about 38,000 employees by 2024, based on natural attrition and potential further voluntary severance programs. So, Chair, with that, again, apologies for taking such a lot of time of the committee, but thank you for the opportunity, and we are available for further questions.
Chair, if I can just fill in a few points. I'm not sure if you're muted, Chair.
Oh, sorry, I'm muted. I'm muted. It's you now.
Thank you. On the question of the CRO, I've responded to that earlier on already. Just a few additional points that I wish to make. Firstly, in relation to projects like Medupi and CBET, there is a specialized set of studies that are being undertaken across the globe now on what are called mega projects. And they seem to always run into very similar difficulties. We'll try and see if we can find some material, excuse me, for the committee to look at. But there's a lot of lessons there. And certainly in the case of Transnet, some of the lessons from Eskom will have to be learned as we go into the future. Whether you have turnkey operators, or whether the state takes responsibility to be a project integrator, clearly the former is the way to go, and the latter is what creates immense problems. In respect of the Deputy President's political committee, the issue of municipal debt, as the CEO explained, has been under discussion. I think there's an interesting model that is beginning to emerge, but we'll give you more details once we bed that down. But across most municipalities, what we're finding is that the issue of illegal connections, the overloading of transformers and substations and so on, is a big issue. And the other side of that coin, of course, is, as the CEO pointed out, the installation of meters so that people pay for what they use. And in parts of Soweto, for example, that has been very successfully implemented. But what we might want to do, Chair, is that in a month's time or so, have a special session on the distribution part of the Eskom business, so that we understand collectively how that side of the business works and how it relates to some of the issues that have been raised, including the companies that owe money. I went through that annex again while we were talking, and you now find certain coal companies that seem to be owing Eskom money for electricity that they might have used. So it tells you the nature of the difficulties we have. On irregular expenditure, we're finding this across SOEs at the moment, where because of the recovery work that is being done, and more careful audits are being done, irregular expenditure from 5 or 6 years ago or 4 years ago is now being put through as current irregular expenditure, current as in the audited statement. And the auditors are not careful enough to disaggregate the past from the present. And so that creates this impression that, in for example, that 2021 financial year or the 2019-2020 financial year, you've had a massive explosion of irregular expenditure, whereas that amount is an accumulation of all of the past amounts. So one of the appeals that we're going to make to the audit profession, whether they come from the AG or elsewhere, is to disaggregate some of these numbers and take account of the past that I described earlier on. On the matter of the debt tenor, that is largely about 10 years versus the lifespan of a power station and the kind of investments that are made in infrastructure, I think this is an issue that we will engage with the Eskom management on and see what it is that can be done in that particular regard. I want to confirm that the IPP round one, round two contracts must be renegotiated. We started the process. It's halted a bit, but it needs more energy to be put into it. From all accounts, the banks that are provided funding for some of these projects are walking away with quite substantial profits and returns. And that's not fair on the consumer at the end of the day. If there isn't a proper sharing of benefits arising from some of these projects. Finally, there's no doubt, and the management board of Eskom and ourselves agree, that there is a clear message that the CEO has been sending out with his colleagues, that the operations efficiency within Eskom has to improve. And a lot more effort needs to be put in to share skills from people who have experience to young managers who need the experience. And a bit of humility on all sides would be extremely helpful to make sure the right level of learning actually happens in this particular regard. So that is currently the kind of approach that the management is taking, which we fully endorse. And at the same time, on the question of load shedding in particular, whilst there are operational difficulties, we do require, as has been said on many occasions, our partner department, DMRE, to come to the party faster in order, in respect of additional megawatts that can be utilized and provide cover. But I think that is a matter that is under discussion, and the regulator has to play its rightful role in that particular regard as well. So I think there is a spirit of cooperation, which we hope to build on over the next few weeks, and we can then inform you of the results that we've had. But otherwise, Chair, I think Eskom is going through the recovery process quite well. And at the same time, there are these additional business model changes that are ongoing for 2021 and the challenge of climate change and the just transition, which will also occupy all of our minds. And once we have the content of that put to you as a committee, we can have a lot more constructive discussion as well. So on behalf of Eskom and ourselves, thank you very much for this opportunity to provide this information.
Thank you, Minister. Honourable members, I think now we are left with just very few minutes, and we still have to deal with the minutes of the previous session. I can only take two people to make follow-up to their question very short. I will check here whose hands are. Um,
There's only one hand here.
My hand to chair, please.
Mawadwe?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's take those two. Mawadwe Shabalala. Can you come? That Mawadwe?
Okay. No, thanks, Chair. So, Minister, this list, I've received the list of this corporation that I've requested. Thanks very much. With regards to the mining companies that are actually providing or selling coal to Eskom, I think the easiest way is just to take from the invoices. I mean, how does Exxaro owe 1.2 million? So just take it from the invoices and then settle that amount. They are even disputing. That's how powerful they are. They dispute what Eskom is telling them. And then the last one, Chair, is that I have not heard about the response on the Bowman that was contracted to investigate the VELF project. Can I please get a response? Or will I get it a written response like the CEO was saying? Some of the questions is going to write a written response. Thanks, Chair. That's all.
Thank you, Mawadwe. Honorable Shabalala?
Thank you so much, Chair. I won't be long. I wanted just to make a follow-up on that applied 70 billion spending on the deviations. And of course, it was not approved. So I did ask what was the rationale for the application of the deviation. And we do have a bit of answers there, but I want to know, is there a way to deal with these issues on the deviation within the planned budget? That was the question. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Minister and your team?
So on the Bowman's question, I think the CEO was very clear. He'll do the necessary homework and get back to you. So it will be provided in writing. As far as mining companies that might be owing money, I think that's an operational issue. Let's leave it to the management to deal with. And if they have difficulties, they'll come to you and embarrass those companies in the appropriate way. And on the question of deviations, perhaps the CEO must repeat his answer and give a bit more detail. But as far as I can understand it, there's no untoward conduct there. But let me leave it to Mr. Director.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honourable Chairman, and to the members for the follow-up questions. In response to the Honourable Chabalala's question, yes, there was a request for a deviation of some 67 billion rand for the expansion of a coal supply contract for the Duva Power Station for a further period of 14 years. This request was denied by National Treasury. Eskom then decided to change its approach, and it has now agreed for an expansion of the existing coal supply contract for a period of 4 years. That comes at a cost of 8.1 billion rand. And after the expiry of that contract, we will go out on open tender for the supply of coal to Duva Power Station for the remaining life of that power station. I hope that that answers the question on that particular topic.
Yes, very well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Minister. Thank you, Group CEO. Thank you to all people who have been able to assist with presentation from Eskom, including the minister, the ministry as a whole. We appreciate the whole energy you put here to assist us and respond to our questions. From now on, Honourable Members, we can release Eskom and any other people that are not affected by the next part of our agenda.
Thank you, Chair, and goodbye.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. From now,
I will be dealing with the minutes of the previous meeting. Ms. Taylor, can you help us, Acting Secretary?
Yes, Chairperson, I'm here.
Okay, can you quickly take us through the minutes?
Chairperson, DISCO has advised that members received the minutes previously, so he didn't share them with me. So he's suggesting that members just use the minutes that were sent to them earlier.
Come again? I didn't get you properly.
I spoke to DISCO about the minutes, and he didn't share them with me because he says members have already received them. So he is suggesting that members just go through the minutes that he distributed after that meeting.
Oh, okay. I get you.
Fortunately, I don't know the content of the minutes.
Okay. Honourable members, are you ready having the minutes at your disposal? Because we still have an option not to deal with the minutes now and wait for Mr. Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, Muchumi, to be present, and then we deal with them then next sitting of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson Tshabalala.
Yes, Tshabalala.
Yes, given we got the presentation, Kusile, the notice, and the ESCOM and presentation from ESCOM and CO. And so I'll just really suggest that Chair, let's defer them for the next meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Any second, Honourable Members? Second,
Thanks, Chair Mkhwanazi. I think that's proper. I second the proposal by Honourable Tshabalala.
Thank you, Honourable Mkhwanazi. On that note, therefore, Honourable Members, I think we reach the end of our session and our meeting is then to adjourn. Thank you so much.
Long live the Chair. Hello,
Thanks, Chair.
TG, how are you?